From the Squamish Chief.
This is the Squamish Sound. I'm Keely Bartlett.
And I'm Stephen Chua. This is the 23rd episode of our weekly podcast.
You'll hear the story behind the story as we take you into the newsroom. We'll talk about what did and didn't get into the newspaper this week.
On the show today, we're covering our local MLA, Jordan Sturry, has revealed the results of a gas study that he has conducted on fuel prices inside Squamish's historic Judd Farm. And Garibaldi at Squamish wants the district to consider annexing the project. First off, motor fuel prices have always been a huge point of interest for locals. I can't tell you how many times I get emailed, stopped on the street, calls about this supposed price fixing or price gouging that is going on. There are a lot of layers to this type of theory, I guess we could call it. But today we're going to focus mainly on one aspect, and that is the fact that because there is a TransLink tax in the Lower Mainland, and we are not part of that, why do our prices seem to always match the Lower Mainland?
Right.
So the deal is that there is an 18-cent additional tax in the Vancouver area to pay for TransLink services, like the SkyTrain, the buses, all of that.
Services we notably don't have on the Sea to Sky.
Exactly. Very notably. So we don't have that, so we don't pay that tax. But a lot of people just casually driving by on the highway seem to see that our prices are often very close to the city's actual prices. Sometimes they're more.
And we always hear when they are.
Yes, always. So recognizing that this has been a very, very big point of contention, our local representative, Jordan Sturdy, decided to take it upon himself to just kind of track gas prices in the Sea to Sky, compare them with gas prices that he saw in North Vancouver, and he released the results of that. It's been like a few months. What he had told me is that he basically has people from his office take notes on how prices are. They choose a gas station in each area, and they check in maybe once, twice, or whatever times a week. It's not every day. He said that there are a lot of imperfections in the study, that he's not a trained statistician, but this is kind of like maybe something to get a little bit more of a bearing to see of what's going on.
What our methodology was to try and stick with a consistent set of suppliers. So we looked at Chevron in particular in Whistler, in Squamish, and in Vancouver, because there was a common theme there, or a common supplier. And then we do it 2 days a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And we also did some work with Husky and others, but just to give us a better sense of the, because, you know, they all tended to follow each other anyway, for however that works. But the real interest was, is that differential reflecting with regard to a TransLink fuel levy, is that reflected in the pricing between Metro and the corridor?
And you'll notice that the results aren't quite what you'd expect. The bottom line is that on any one day, it's hard to see this differential, that this 18 cent differential that supposedly exists. But according to his results, if you average it all out throughout the months, the average difference appears to be 18 cents, which is the gap between the Lower Mainland and at least Squamish. So obviously the study is not
scientific
necessarily, but it seems to kind of suggest at least that the casual observation that we've been going through may not always be quite as accurate as it seems. I mean, there's so many different variables about the times and when exactly you observe this. Do you just happen to notice it more when prices...
When you need gas?
Yes. Or do you just... Are the times that you that it seems to be matching the city so much more memorable that you forget about the times when it's not. Mm-hmm. It calls into question a lot of things. Obviously, the results have had mixed reception. So he pushed this out on Facebook a little while ago. Some people just weren't quite buying it, understandably.
Right.
As far as a statistical analysis, this is probably, at least in recent memory, the best that we have at the moment. We have tried contacting the Competition Bureau many times. We've tried talking about this on a range of with a range of experts, including, you know, Gas Buddy, very notable mm-hmm. people. And the issue is very, very complicated in a nutshell. But this might at least illuminate a tiny bit more about what's going on with that. So that's how it goes for gas prices.
So I guess we're going to turn it over to the Judd Farm. So mm-hmm. this is a very old property in Squamish. It was one of the first in Brackendale. And it was really interesting. We went after Tamara Stanners, who's one of the owners of the house now, with her husband, Lorne Badger. Tamara was emceeing an event a little while ago that we attended, and she was talking about the history of the house and all these fun memories she has of working on it. So we thought it would be interesting to kind of go in and see what does somebody who owns a property that could be considered historic to Squamish, how do you take care of it? What do you do with it? What mm-hmm. kind of responsibility do you have to that house?
Yeah.
Right? And so I went over, and I'm pretty new to Squamish, so it was really interesting to see a physical representation of the history, the human history that's here, that's more built than what we would consider the trails, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And so this house, it's a three-story building, and it has six bedrooms in it, and it's on 3.5 acres of property, which isn't super common these days. But I sat down with Tamara in their kitchen, and she walked me through some of the renovations that they had done. So they've had the house since the year 2000.
Wow, okay.
And they actually bought it from direct descendants of the Judd family who built the house.
Wow, so there's a direct connection there.
There's a direct line. It was passed down through the family until Stanners and Badger bought it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was pretty interesting to see. But she was telling me that in the 60s, the popular modernization of the time was they plexiglassed in the porch, this beautiful open porch that they have now.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
An interesting choice. And they also covered up a lot of the windows that they'd had and replaced it with aluminum siding windows.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then this is a hard part for people who love home renovations. They put down tile and shag carpet on the floors.
Another fascinating choice. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Tamara and Lorne decided to go through and try to bring the house back to what it would have been like as much as they could. They took all these cool different things, like the cabinets are from old homes in Vancouver and Chilliwack, and they were able to find where the original windows were and put glass back in there. And of course, they removed the shag carpet. But so there's wood floors again.
Okay.
And they actually invited the most recent person who had owned the house, Ellen Grant, to come and see what they had done to it once they were done. It took about 5 years of renovations. And when she stepped in, Tamara was telling me that she began to cry. She said that it looked just like how her grandmother had kept it.
Oh, that's a nice detail.
So another reason why we thought it would be interesting to go over to this house in particular and to talk about the history of it was because of some recent talks about a heritage policy in Squamish, which we currently don't have. It's been kind of in the talks for a while, and as you
absolutely
reported on, council is working on developing one.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that transpires. But we thought it would be interesting to ask Tamara what her perspective as the owner of what could be considered a historic property, what her perspective on having a heritage policy would be.
Okay, let's hear it.
I look at what happened to Vancouver and it hurts. It hurts to see how so much of Vancouver's heritage is gone. And yet, I still think back to when the Judds were here and the evolution of everything, like they actually started with a little tiny cottage in the back and then it flooded. I think it flooded three times before they realized, wait, this is not going to work for us. And they built the space up and then they put the house on it. And there's also evolution that happens with humanity as well. I mean, we've seen it everywhere. And I think there really needs to be a balance. And that's what I'd like to see, is just balance in keeping, you know, what makes sense to keep, you know, what is structurally sound to keep, what works, and then also build the buildings that are going to be efficient to run and sustainable, and balances everything. And I don't know who's best to make up those rules. Is it the council? You know, is it our district? I honestly don't know. But I do know with this, if this house were not structurally sound, if there was a problem with it, it would be hard to think that we wouldn't have the say on how we fix it or what to do with it. So there's really a balance, and it would be nice to think that people who buy property or owners would, you know, value history as much as, say, I do and Lauren does, but I don't know if that's the case. And maybe it needs to be on a one-to-one basis, or like a, you know, individual basis with different historical sites left. But there, Squamish never really had that many, not really. You know, if there's can be some original structures left there that are still cool and, you know, sustainable and work, that makes sense. But if it doesn't, then what do we do? Do we want to tie people's hands and say, no, sorry, you can't change that?
So that's a pretty interesting take, because, you know, she actually sees Squamish as the community, but also on a personal side, she does own this house as well.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting. But the house also has a really interesting present fixation, I suppose, for Squamish, is that it is often the site for different productions that come through town. It's very popular in Hallmark movies.
Huh,
so
okay.
Tamara was telling me that around Christmas time, her family will sit down and watch Hallmark movies that were shot in the house while they're in their house.
That must be surreal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
All right, we are bringing in our editor, Jennifer Thuncher, where she's going to come in and tell us what her pick of the week is.
Pick of the week. I think the discussion at council over gas that you covered in the story this week was one of the more newsworthy events.
Okay, yes. So would you like me to tell everyone what this was all about?
Yes, sure. Quickly.
So, very quickly. Garibaldi at Squamish has been kind of giving this idea to the district of, hey, why don't you expand municipal boundaries a little bit more to include us within your territory? The reason being that, as of now, they are under the boundaries of the Squamish-Lillooet Regional District, but they are just outside of the District of Squamish's boundaries, and they kind of want to be brought in to enjoy, I guess, the perks that would come with having a local government look after things. Presumably this would be like infrastructure, roads, sewers, pipes, all that sort of thing. And they've been hawking this idea for quite some time, but this is the time. What makes this part special is they've actually appeared before council and they've said, hey, how about you actually conduct a study to see what would happen if this did occur? So it wasn't a formal, I mean, it's the most formal ask that they've had, at least in recent memory.
Right. What's interesting is right now, most of the local governments in our area have expressed opposition to Garibaldi at Squamish. And that wasn't always the case. So let's listen to Rob McLeod from Garibaldi at Squamish, formerly of the District of Squamish, who presented to council on the project for a little bit of the history.
The modern project started in 94 with a request from Squamish Council to the province to initiate a study on how to increase winter tourism. And out of that came a RFP that went out internationally and resulted in an interim agreement with the province of BC and Garibaldi Alpine Resorts, which is our predecessor.
Right. So interesting because obviously it has a past here, and now the new iteration hasn't been quite as well received by governments or most of at least our reading public. The pushback has been quite negative.
Yes, it has been. So I guess probably like one of the main points that council brought up was that especially Mayor Karen Elliott, she brought up the previous questions that the other council had. So this would include questions that they had about the environmental assessment process, questions about things like where's the water going to come from, what's the economic impact, what's the socioeconomic impact, and obviously no municipality wants to get stuck with the bill if they build all these roadways and stuff to this resort, but the resort fails and does not come up with any revenue and therefore no tax revenue to recover that money. Garibaldi and Squamish has said, hey, what about if you create a business improvement association for that area that would cover the cost? Elliot said that that didn't quite cut it, and there's a lot of back and forth about that. There's talk about climate change, why are you building a resort there if snow's not really coming as much anymore? There's a whole bunch of things. So council didn't outright say no, but they had a lot of questions, and what they did is they did kind of like a half measure. They didn't say no to creating the study. They said, why don't we just refer this to the budget process next year, and staff can also have a look about how this report might meld in with all these other big questions that we have. And if it's worth doing, then we'll go ahead and do the report. And if staff find, however, that these questions are just so unanswered and won't really be helped by this boundary extension study, then that would probably not work out in favor of making that happen.
Right. To be the devil's advocate, though, this project has been in the works for so long, for many years,
yeah,
under different groups. And it has got its provincial okay, the environmental assessment process. Mm-hmm. And the interesting point that I think Rod brought up for the project is that it does go phase by phase, which I don't think we've been particularly clear about. Mm-hmm. So if phase one, when and if phase one goes ahead, it has to be successful before phase two.
Yes.
So the full ending of the resort is not what we're going to get. We're going to get pieces and then see how each stage does. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a fair point by them. But on the flip side, some of the things that were said may have worked with the project, say, 10 years ago. For example, we could reduce the number of cars off the road because people can work at the resort. Right now, no one can find labor, almost no one. None of the businesses in town, none is an exaggeration. Many
yes,
businesses in town have expressed that it's hard to find labor, especially in the construction industry and service industry. So to say we can give you jobs, I don't know if that's going to fly. Mm-hmm. And then taking cars off the road paired with we're going to make this sort of a complete mountain tourism. We have tons of cars that are going to be on the road coming to it,
yeah,
unless we get regional transit, which is not moving ahead very quickly. And then also that the complete tourism thing. Back in the day, tourism was something, it was a sleepy little town and we needed tourism. Right now, I think we got some tourism.
Yes, a fair amount.
So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, bottom line, they can go ahead without Squamish. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part that they're trying to point out, which is fair.
Absolutely.
They can go ahead without us. They've mm-hmm. got their provincial. So it shall be interesting.
It will.
More letters to the editor. Send them editor@squamishchief.com.
All right. Thanks for stopping by, Jen.
Ciao.
And just as a quick note, we're going to be taking a short summer break from the podcast for the next couple weeks. We will be back in August, so stay tuned.
The Squamish Sound is brought to you by the Squamish Chief. The music for this episode was produced by Stephen Chua, cover photo by Clayton Matthews. Have a story tip? Give us a call at 604-892-9161. Send an email to news@squamishchief.com. You can read these stories and more online at squamishchief.com, the newspaper, and have the news delivered to your door every week.